And who is my neighbor? You know, one of the things about us human beings is we rely on habit and routine to get through a normal day. If we had to think about every single thing we've done just to get here, we'd be exhausted by this point of the time of the day. Like we get up and we just launch into the habit of routine. We wash our teeth, we eat breakfast, we wash our teeth, we get low, we get showered, we just go into the routine and habit of what we always do to get ready. If we had to think through everything, every single item of every single part of the day, it'll be literally too much. And so we rely on this routine, this developed habit, and sort of what I call batches of habit that make into a routine. And we have different routines for different. Your Sunday routine is different than your weekday routine, and your vacation routine will be different than your work routine, and so on and so on. It's necessary for us to function. But what's built in there, unknown to ourselves, is a certain filtration system, if you would. We filter and we block out things that we don't need to see or hear. We just kind of focus on it. And in that filter, we can block out a very obvious presence of things that are important to us. And we can block out any sort of interfering realities. Like, for example, on a positive way, we can have a morning routine where you sit down to have your spouse. You have a morning routine where somebody makes coffee, and gets up and makes coffee, the other one does this or does that, and you sit down and you have your morning coffee. And you're really never per se present to that as a beautiful moment. That's your routine. It's just, that's what I do. We get breakfast, you get coffee, I do this, until your spouse dies. And then all of a sudden, that lost routine, that habit of making your spouse making you coffee every morning and you went to do something else is no longer there, and now you deeply miss the routine. And all the time you were doing it, you were never fully present to that beautiful routine. And now it's gone and you miss it. And that indeed exactly what happens. Another one is we filter out by necessity sometimes, or just by habit, is we block out those things that might interfere with our routine. Like we don't see certain things. I mean, who among us has noticed every single homeless person we drive down the freeway or the road? We don't. Our filters, blinkers are on, and we don't really notice it until somebody says something. Now you're going to notice it because I just mentioned it, right? So now that I've seen it, you're going to notice, oh my God, there's a homeless. Oh my God, they're everywhere. Where? I didn't notice them yet. And that's what happens. Until we're challenged, until we have to push ourselves outside our comfort zone, that which is important and present to us, we won't see. And that's hard for us because going outside our comfort zone is not something we readily want to do because, well, we rely on habit. And some of the biases we have can be quite negative. And actually can be really prejudicial if we don't watch it. So we have to take, so this morning I'm going to push you outside your comfort zone. I'm going to break open this parable, and you'll probably wish I stayed in Nicaragua for a while. So here goes. This parable is one of a timeless parable. I mean, when you hear this parable, indeed most of you had this reaction. Oh yeah, I know this one. Let's skip to the end. I know this one. Come on, I know how it ends. And we fast forward the whole story because we know how it ends, right? But here's the part. This is a timeless one. So much so that we've named hostels after this. We've named businesses after this. The Good Samaritan. Like, I mean, it's so iconic that it has its own sort of almost paradigmatic understanding. It's its own little world, this Good Samaritan, right? But yet, because we have heard it so often, we tend to jump right through it and miss the more obvious, provocative language that Jesus was doing and poking at us. that Jesus was doing to the disciples who heard this. So for example, and we're going to do that now this morning, I want you to not be one of the three standard buyers. I don't want you to be one of the three people who come along. I want you to imagine instead you're the victim. You're the one who was robbed. You're the one who's on the victim on the side of the street. So imagine yourself in that role. Now imagine your worst enemy, the person you most despise, the person who maybe you don't have somebody you despise or an enemy, but somebody you just don't like. Or maybe it's a classic group. Maybe it's an immigrant. Maybe it's an undocumented. Maybe it's a person of color. Maybe it's just somebody in the family. And you don't want them. Of all the people to help you, you're on the ground and you are a victim and everybody's walking past you. And the one person who chooses to help you is the one person you don't like. How does that feel? Is it a little bit unsettling? It's unsettling. It doesn't feel so good. That's exactly what Jesus did to this scholar. He said the Good Samaritan. Remember, this is the one group of people that the Jews despised. It was the Samaritans. So the fact that he said a Samaritan was like, it was a gut punch to say a Samaritan was the one that helped. And so you have to go through this as that understanding. What Jesus was doing was deliberately provocative into a reaction. And the scholar, remember, this is a good man. This is a man who knew the answers. He knew the law. He said, what was the right thing to do? He says, what's the highest commandment? To love the Lord with all your mind, with all your heart, with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Hey, 10 out of 10, well done. Just do that and you're good to go. But because he wanted to justify himself, because he wanted to not only just say that he knew it, he wanted to make sure that everybody around knew. He wanted to say, hey, I got this, I got it. So who's your neighbor? He was trying to show off. And Jesus gives him this gut punch. The one that who's going to help you is the one you least want to help. That's who you help. That's who you got to be a servant to. Now, this word, and we got to break this open. It's an important word. He said, when the Samaritan sees this victim, he is moved with compassion. Now, I've explained this before, but this is Luke's gospel, and the word they use in the Greek word for compassion is this, it's like a gut move. Your bowels move. I mean, that's what this word means, is moved with his bowels. It's like your daughter or your son is lying on the ground, and you immediately reach out because it's your son or your daughter. This is not something that happens to a stranger. This is when somebody happens when you know them, when you see them as one of you. And your heart moved with compassion. You compelled to move, compelled to do something. And the lawyer got it. Because he names it when Jesus says the story. He says, which of the three neighbors acted as a neighbor? And he answered right on. He got the extra bonus point. He said, the one who acted with mercy. He named what the move with compassion meant. Is that it was no longer inside the comfort zone. It was no longer about stereotypes. It was the one who cared and was merciful. And that is what we're called to do. We're called to be merciful. We're called to allow ourselves to be moved with compassion, to literally let our body be guttural moved, which means we have to push ourselves outside our comfort zone. It means that we can't just do what we've always done. Why? Because then we're going to do what we've always done. And that's not enough for the Lord. See, all these readings, they're all about not knowing is not enough. Knowing is not enough. You have to act. So what the first reading said, so what the second reading said, and most definitely it's what the gospel said. And Martin Luther King Jr. says this beautifully. He says, in looking at how the neighbor says, when I ask whether I should do something to this person, the question that you have to move from is, if I do something, what happens to me, to this person? If I help this victim, what happens to me? He says we must move from there to what if I don't do something, what will happen to him? We have to move from the I to the other. And the only way we can do that is if we change our perspective. When we see the other as another I, another me. And that is the person who we least want to help. Whether that be a undocumented, whether that be a immigrant, whether that be a Muslim, or whether that be a gay person, or whether that be a divorced person, or whatever all those persons that seem to stir up emotion inside of us, then that's the one we're called to serve. And it feels really discomforting. And that is what the Lord is trying to do. So today, I'm not sure who you're going to meet. But unless you open your eyes and step outside your routine, your normal, habitual way of doing things, you're not going to see it. And you're going to go right past the opportunity to be Christ to somebody. And remember, the second reading says a role is to be Christ to somebody. Christ is the center of everything. So if we're called to be Christ to somebody, then we're going to have to look and see like Christ to them. Now look, we just got back from Nicaragua, and in your name, 50 of us went down there to act in your name. And the truth be told is, while we went down to encounter Christ and to be Christ to them, what we got back in return was they treated us as neighbors, and they were far more we received than we could ever have given. That's the truth. It's when we treat somebody like a neighbor, we get far more in return than we could ever have given in the first place. So today, let's step outside our routine. Let's be a little bit uncomfortable. Let's notice the special moments of grace that the Lord has put in our lives, and the opportunities to be Christ to somebody. Who is our neighbor? It's right in front of us. It's somebody today that needs help.